You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the people and ideas behind your favorite online brands. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Nicole Gibbons, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you are the founder and CEO of Clair. Clair is a direct-to-consumer paint brand that just launched a few months ago in July of 2018. Is that right?
Yeah, we launched on July 31st, so we're brand new.
Wow. So you're a couple months in. What was the launch like? How did it feel? You've been working on this for the past, sounds like, almost 2 years.
Yeah, it was so exciting to finally launch because I was operating the company in stealth mode prior to that. So imagine just, working on the biggest thing I've ever undertook in my life and not being able to talk about it. So, you know, we had a huge PR blitz around the launch. So we were covered in all the top publications and, you know, I was finally able to share with the world what I've been building. So it felt really good.
So tell us a little bit about Clair and what's unique about it.
Yeah. So Claire, like you mentioned, we're a direct-to-consumer paint brand, and our mission is really to make paint shopping easier and more inspiring. If you've ever bought paint before, you'll know that the shopping experience can be a huge headache. Usually it requires multiple trips back and forth to the store, or your big box home improvement retail outlet is typically the most uninspiring retail environment to ever shop in. And I believe that, you know, decorating your home and shopping for your home should be a much more inspiring experience. There are thousands of colors to choose from, and it's just a really cumbersome process. So at Clair, we've simplified the journey. We've brought a selection of curated colors to make finding a color easier. We've innovated around the sampling process with a peel and stick color sample. So it's one step, no mess. You can see exactly what the color looks like on your walls in an instant. We've built a technology-enabled color recommendation engine, which is sort of like a proprietary algorithm infused with a series of questions that helps you find the best paint color for your space. We also sell all the tools that you would need to paint with, and we deliver everything to your door. So we essentially provide the customer with everything they need, from the design guidance to the paint to the tools to the tips and inspiration to tackle their paint project with confidence.
I was checking out your website, and I really love the idea of the sampling process that you've developed. Especially the thing that I like the most about it is the swatches are big.
Yeah.
When you go to a place to get, you know, swatches and it's like this tiny thing, you're trying to imagine it on your wall, it's a little tricky. So that must have been a insight somehow you figured out in the development process.
Yeah. I mean, sampling colors used to be a really, a messy multi-step process. You would have to go to the store often just to get those little paint chips. People would take those paint chips home. They'd take tons of them home because they're free and try to narrow them down to three or five colors that they want to sample. And then they'll go back to the store and purchase a sample. And the old school method of sampling requires you to buy an 8-ounce liquid jar of paint and the tools, go back home, literally paint the swatches onto your wall, wait for it to dry, and then stare at it for weeks until you finally decide on your color. And while you're deciding on your color, you've got your walls ruined with, you know, a Tetris-like assemblage of swatches painted all over your walls. And so, you know, we really wanted to make that part of the process really simple. One of the biggest pain points, like I mentioned, is color choice. And people get really paralyzed by that process, number one, because the options are overwhelming, and number two, because the sampling process isn't easy. So, you know, we felt like, we really wanted to make that step simple. And what I noticed out there in the market are, you know, brands that sell these adhesive sort of test swatches that you still have to paint before you put them on your wall. So you still have to go through the process. Essentially, they just enable you to not ruin your wall. And so we thought, what if we actually had adhesive swatches that were, you know, pre-painted in the finish to help the customer see exactly what the color will look like without having to ruin their walls. And so our Perfect Color swatch helps customers do just that. And one of the great things about them too is that they're repositionable and they won't damage your walls. So you can peel them off, you know, move them around the room to get a sense of what the color would look like under different light sources. And it really makes the color selection process so much easier.
I noticed that among your investors, you've got Jeff Rader, who's the co-founder of Harry's and Warby Parker. And I wondered if part of the inspiration for this sampling process came from Warby Parker and the way they've done, try-ons, home try-ons.
Not necessarily. I mean, we're a direct-to-consumer brand, so we knew that we would be shipping everything to the customer's door, and most people sample a color before they buy it. So sampling was inherently always part of the process. We did, though, I think, take some cues from other direct-to-consumer brands like Harry's and Warby, who Jeff Rader also helped found, in making our sampling experience, you know, a moment. So it arrives to your mailbox in really beautiful packaging. It's a bright yellow envelope. It has a fun little saying on it. And, you know, the packaging is really, really beautiful. So, you know, we want people to get excited about the paint process versus, you know, the old school way when you're going back and forth to the store, you're just totally over it. So every moment in the Claire journey is fun and approachable. And I think making sure that every touch point was an experience is definitely a cue that I took from some of the other awesome direct-to-consumer brands that paved the way, like Harry's.
When you were describing all of the stuff that you launched with, the genius wizard thing that helps you like pick colors, all of the colors that you launched with, the sampling process, this doesn't seem like an MVP. It's not like a minimum viable product approach. You really went for, here's the entire solution. We need to launch with that entire thing. Was there a point where you thought maybe like you should start simpler, or did you really feel like you needed to have all of that ready to be able to launch?
You know, I definitely thought about taking a simpler approach, but, you know, me being an interior designer, I really wanted to help people. And so I really wanted to build in as much design guidance into the process. And I felt like if we didn't have that, we wouldn't really be helping the customer. You know, we didn't want to just be a brand that was selling paint online. You know, my goal was to add a lot more value for the customer. And so, you know, after really thinking through what our customer journey should look like, it was just a no-brainer that we would need to have a very polished product. And in addition to that, you know, we're competing against these incumbent brands that have a lot of resources. And I felt like it was really important for us, you know, as a disruptor to do things that were different and innovative. You know, the paint industry has never changed. It's a centuries old industry. So we really wanted to take a different approach and do something that was helpful for the customer, because I felt like that guidance piece was also really, really missing from the shopping experience.
How did you go about testing and iterating on some of those tools like that? I forgot what you call it, the Swatch Genius or something like that?
It's called Claire Color Genius. And we did a lot of just kind of friends and family usability testing. There were a lot of iterations to make sure that the results that customers would get would be, you know, ones that they would love. And, you know, it's a product that we're still iterating on. We're building new features into the quiz to make it even better. We're working on some other features that I think will really help the customer with complementary colors and other things. But, you know, the current version asks the customer a series of 8 questions that helps us understand what they're painting, what their space looks like. So, you know, I always like to say it's not like one of the silly quizzes that asks you, you know, what's your favorite nail polish color and then interprets that into a paint color. You know, we ask things that an interior designer would assess, like what kind of natural light does your space get? You know, what direction is your primary light source? What are the other colors of the furnishings in your room? And we take all those things into consideration to recommend the best paint color for you.
I tried it out. It was really cool. And it's presented in a very user-friendly like chat style thing. And I was wondering about the technology behind it. There are some tools now that are pretty accessible, like Intercom or like Drift, that allow you to kind of build those interactions. But it seems like you built something yourselves that... to be able to do that workflow. Is that right?
Yeah. It was an entirely custom build, and it's a very conversational UX. So we want people to feel like they're talking to an interior designer. You know, I like to say as a brand that we're our customers' decorating BFF. We're here to help them through every step in the process. And so that's, you know, why it was important to really build in that conversational element. But our algorithm is proprietary, and you know, we developed all of that custom to create a really unique and innovative experience.
So now that you've been out there publicly for the past couple of months, was there anything that surprised you about the reaction from customers?
It's been a ton of learnings. We've definitely learned a ton. I don't know if there was anything that was majorly surprising. I think one assumption we had was, you know, we weren't sure what the, you know, customer lifetime value would look like for the DIY customer, so the person who's painting their home. And, you know, in just 3 months, we're actually seeing a lot of repeat purchasing. What we're finding is that people are tackling really big projects and they're doing it incrementally. So that's been a really great and exciting surprise. But overall, the customer response has been phenomenal. Customers love our product. They love the Color Genius. They love our easy sampling, you know, and even just the overall experience. You know, we get emails into our CX team, and you know, at the end of every interaction, we send a CSAT survey, and we've literally had customers say, "Can you guys please clone yourselves? Because this is the best customer service I've ever experienced from a brand." And so, to hear those kinds of things is really validating, and it lets us know that we're on the right track, and you know, we're still in our infancy, but we can't wait to continue growing, and you know, and keep delivering that amazing experience to all of our customers.
When you went to investors with this idea, was lifetime value one of the concerns? Like, I can imagine that would be something, because, you know, once you paint your walls, maybe you're not changing it that much over the course of several years. Or were there other things that they were more concerned about when they were hearing about the business model?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was necessarily a concern, but, you know, in the paint market, you've got lots of different customer segments. So you have your DIY homeowner who's painting their home. Obviously, you know, the younger the customer is, the more likely they are to have many life stages, which would require them to paint. But then there's also the pro side of the market, which does have a really high lifetime value. And, you know, I'm an interior designer, so I am of that pro market. And I know how important it is to make sure that we're delivering a product that a pro would love as well. So that's definitely something that we're also focused on. You know, it was definitely a question that I got when I was out there pitching, but you know, we definitely have a strategy in place to make sure that we do have customers with high lifetime value, and we're excited about that.
I'd love to hear more about that process of convincing investors, especially because there is such a upfront cost to, you know, setting up, getting the website going, all of this technology that you've built into it, and then all the products, the packaging. What was your pitch like at that time?
Yeah, I mean, I had a deck. I had samples of our perfect color swatches, and that was about it. You know, we hadn't started manufacturing our paint yet. We needed the capital to be able to do that. So it was really just me going into the room with my grand vision to create, you know, an amazing and innovative new paint company for the 21st century. And I think investors really bought into that vision, and that's why we are here today.
Well, I'm sure it helped that, you know, you have this, I don't think everyone will be aware, but you've got a background, you know, in, I guess the entertainment space of home decoration. And I'd love for you to speak a little bit about that. I'm sure that was one of the reasons that people were, you know, willing to back you.
Yeah, I think my background is definitely interesting, and I think investors really, really found it interesting. So actually, before becoming an interior designer, I spent 10 years working in retail. So I worked for a huge global multi-billion-dollar omnichannel retailer. And in a PR role. So I was a PR executive. And while I was at that job, I started...
This was Victoria's Secret or...
Yeah, it was Victoria's Secret, okay. Exactly. So I worked there for almost 10 years. And as global director of PR and events. And so while I was there, I started a decorating blog more or less as a creative outlet. I grew up with a mom who was in the business. So I always loved design, but never in a million years did I think I would actually want to pursue design as a career. But as soon as I set up my blog, I also set up an LLC and started taking on small side projects, you know, spending all my nights and weekends working on either the blog or on small design projects. And I pretty much immediately realized that was what I was more passionate about. And that was around 2008. So definitely not a good time to be branching out on my own to start a business in the midst of a recession, particularly a service-based business. So I kept just kind of like building my thing on the side and really building a persona. And so when I finally left that role in January of 2013, I decided to focus on building my business full time. And my goal was never to just be a designer. It was also to really build a brand, build a personal brand, which included pursuing opportunities in television. And so you know, I started working with private clients, but I also started, you know, dipping my toe in the water of TV land. So 6 months after leaving my job, I ended up booking a role on a DIY decorating show on the Oprah Winfrey Network. It was called Homemade Simple. And I did that for 3 seasons. So it filmed over a span of weeks in the summer. So it left me with lots of time. It wasn't like that was all I did. So I still was working on client projects. I was doing a lot of work in the influencer space. And really just sort of building a name for myself. And all while I was working on those things, I kept thinking about the kind of brand that I wanted to build. And I recognized that across all categories, the home industry was pretty sleepy behind the scenes with very little innovation. And so I knew that I had the right combination of skills and experiences to be able to do something innovative. And so I brainstormed a ton of ideas. And then in 2016, I had the light bulb moment around paint. You know, in my experience as a designer and a design expert, you know, talking to people and helping people with their homes, I came to recognize that shopping for paint was a really, really painful experience. And one of the things that I realized is that as a designer, when I would work with clients and help them with their paint color choices, it was always an easy process, right? Like I'd present a client with one color recommendation. Often I'd have a couple of options and waiting in the wings in case they weren't convinced. But, you know, 99.99% of the time, my clients trusted my choices and took my recommendations. And I think when you have an expert who knows what they're doing and they come with a different level of expertise, you trust that. And so I realized that if I could bring that designer-led expertise into the paint shopping process, maybe people would have a much easier time picking a paint color.
I want to go back to 2008 when you were starting your blog, you know, at the height of the recession. I think people actually say that that's when the best kinds of businesses get built is during recessions, because they tend to be built on stronger foundations. Like you have to make money. You can't, you know, at the peak where we're at now, probably there's actually a lot of businesses that get, you know, investment that might not be great ideas. But 2008 is also when I started my first company that also was in the DIY-ish space. And there was a lot of people, because of the recession, wanting to do things themselves.
Yeah.
You know, that's a more affordable way to go. And so I think that that might have been actually one of the best times to start a company. I don't know if there's anything you learned from that you're still bringing to Claire today, especially maybe around like building an audience and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, at the time that I started my blog and what I called my side hustle design business, I still had a day job. So I wasn't like all in, you know. I don't think I had probably like the level of focus that I did once I left the day job. But what I did have at that time was just this intense desire to learn the industry and to figure out how I could differentiate myself in the design space. And I did really start to build an audience. And 2008 was the early days of blogging. Like there was really no such thing as influencers. You know, blogs weren't really monetized. It was literally just a place on the internet that I created for me to talk about all of the things that I loved and that inspired me. And through that early process of blogging, like you really built a community. You know, it's not like now, particularly like if you discover a blog and the, you know, and the blog already has an audience, it's hard to build that sense of community. And so I was able to do that pretty early on. And, you know, there's sort of a community of OG design bloggers that all started around that time, and I'm still friends with lots of them today. And I think that's what I gathered. I think my trajectory might have been a little bit different if I had left my day job in 2008, but you know, I just sort of kept juggling both because I just felt like it wasn't a good time to take a leap. You know, this particularly during the recession, you know, people were doing it themselves. They were less likely to hire help. And you know, and I knew that, but I think that's one of the great things too about the paint industry is that paint is a product that anyone can do themselves. You know, you know, it's not like fixing a roof or an electrical system where there's a high liability of like, you know, burning down the house or falling off a ladder or whatever. You know, anyone can paint. And, you know, when the economy is tough, it's typically one of the things that people will still do to improve their homes. You know, they might put off renovating a kitchen, but they can certainly purchase a couple gallons of paint and transform the look of their space with just a little bit of elbow grease. And so, you know, I think that's a great aspect of the industry that I chose to set out to disrupt, is that it's one that still remains relatively stable even during tough economic times.
What did you do to actually go find your readers during that time? Were there any tricks that you found effective that worked well back in 2008, 2009?
Yeah. So back in 2008, there were these things called blog rolls. Do you remember that? Those?
Yeah, of course.
So you'd had a blog, and then usually in your sidebar, you would have a list of all the other blogs that you liked or liked to follow. So back in those days, emailing bloggers and asking if you could exchange blog rolls was like what you would do to kind of get awareness. So
I guess today it's like collaborations with influencers or something like that.
Yeah. But back then it was like blog rolls. It was, you know, just being really active in the comments on all of the other blogs that I liked and admired. And then I also was working in PR at the time. So I did a little sort of like email blast to a ton of blogs that I respected and admired, letting them know that I had launched a blog and I felt like I had a really interesting point of view. I lived in New York. I was really kind of connected in the design scene and I worked in fashion and, you know, and so a few other sort of bigger bloggers wrote about me. And so that helped a ton. And then I caught the attention of some editors. So, you know, in the first year of writing my blog, I was written about in Real Simple. I had a feature in the Washington Post. And so I was able to get a lot of press coverage. So between just really being active in the blogging community and then being able to get a little bit of media coverage, I think that's what really started to build the awareness for what I was doing.
And I'm sure that some of those people have like followed you all the way through to now, and that's a great crossover to bring them into the Claire universe. But now that the whole ecosystem around social media has developed so much, what are the new strategies that you've looked at in the past, you know, 12 months to try and get the word out there? Because it just seems like there's so much noise. Everyone who has like, you know, 20,000 followers is an influencer, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a crowded space, but I think, you know, number one, tapping into the people who are already passionate about what I'm doing is a great place to start. So I happen to have lots of friends and, you know, colleagues who are interior designers who had big followings, and they've been really supportive. You know, when we launched, I had a ton of bloggers talking about Claire, a ton of press, and that really helped. And I think right now, you know, we're heavily focused on Instagram. I think it's a great place to build awareness. We're doing a lot of customer insights work, and a lot of our customers are finding out about us through social media. So we know that it's working. And, you know, I think in the future, we're going to be putting a lot of effort and budget behind content. I'm really optimizing for as much organic growth as possible. And so we really want to go hard on the content side of things. Sort of being somewhat of a social media influencer myself has definitely helped tremendously.
Is there any crossover with what you were doing in the TV world, or are those things like two separate worlds altogether? Are you still doing TV now?
No, not really. I like to say that I retired at the beginning of last year. So and when I decided at the beginning of 2017 to commit myself to Claire, I stopped taking on design projects. And, you know, I think like I continue to do morning shows. I did one segment, I think, last year on the Rachel Ray Show. But for the most part, I am 100% focused on Claire. And if I do pursue any TV opportunities in the future, Claire will definitely be a part of those.
I think it's pretty unique that you have, you know, the perspective of doing a blog, doing TV, being on Instagram. Like these are all their own separate communities to some extent and different ways of speaking to people. I'm just curious to hear, like, over the next few years, what you're optimistic about in terms of where I guess, where the eyeballs are, how you talk to people in those different channels of communication. Like, what's your, do you have any insight for the rest of us about like the difference between what you experience to being in the TV world versus what you see when you're in the digital world?
Yeah, I mean, I think my perspective on that is actually not shaped by being in the world as a personality, but really in my experience in retail and understanding what really moves the needle in terms of customer acquisition. I mean, I don't know if I can say with full confidence that there's one channel I'm really optimistic about, because we're still really early and we're still doing a bunch of testing and learning. I don't think we've unlocked that fully at this early stage, 3 months in, but you know, I'm really excited about offline channels. I believe they really work.
When you say offline, do you mean stores? Do you mean mail?
All sorts of things. Direct mail, out of home advertising, you know, non-digital channels. I think the default or the sort of formula that most direct to consumer brands follow is, you know, really heavily focused around digital advertising as the primary way to acquire customers. But, you know, I think having a really diverse mix is what ultimately will keep your customer acquisition costs efficient. You know, we're really focused on trying to optimize the channels that we have, but also trying to find, you know, ways to be really efficient in our customer acquisition.
Yeah. It's gotten so expensive to advertise on Facebook and those types of things. Is that something you've experimented with, or have you found success there at all?
I think a lot of fluctuation. I mean, like I said, we're still very much in the testing and learning phase, but I don't think like with the bit of work we've done on Facebook that we've found a consistent and reliable audience yet, you know, so it's hard to say, but, you know, when I talk to all of my founder friends who are much deeper in the growth marketing and paid acquisition space than I am, I definitely hear that, it's tremendously expensive and, you know, people are trying to figure out what's the next new channel that they can focus on, because it does feel like, you know, from everything I've heard from other founders and that Facebook advertising is getting very, very expensive.
One avenue that a lot of people who find success in TV tend to approach is the licensing model. You know, putting, I think Martha Stewart is probably like the most famous in doing that with paints. I don't know. There's probably other personalities who've branched out into paint, but it's a very different approach to it than building your own company and trying to source the products yourself and all of that. Was there ever a time where you considered that as another approach?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first started my business full time, I was really inspired by the Martha Stewart business model. And, you know, she built her entire brand and her entire business off of licensing. And at the time, ironically, I was like, I would never want to operate a company. I'm just going to license my name, be creative, and do things that way. And fast forward, here I am being an operator, which is exactly what I said I didn't want to do.
Why did you do it?
I know. I mean, I definitely explored licensing. I felt like two things. Number one, I felt like the economics of licensing wasn't that compelling for me. But number two, you don't have the kind of control and the kind of you know, sort of autonomy to create a customer experience, right? You're essentially just putting your name on a product. You might have a hand in the creative process, but you're leaving it entirely up to a partner to market and manufacture and distribute your products. And, you know, it really stemmed back to wanting to do something innovative. If I would have just licensed my name for paint, I would have had a product sitting on the shelf at a hardware store, which is exactly the experience that I don't want for my customers. And so I felt like in order to do something that was really innovative and disruptive, I would need to go out and do it on my own. And I was also, you know, as I got further along in my career and started doing a lot more exploration around the kind of company I wanted to build, I became less inspired by the Martha model and more inspired by the first wave of D2C brands like Warby Parker and Harry's and Casper. And I was super inspired by the idea that you could take a product, particularly a product in a really unsexy category, number one, make it cool, number two, create a much better experience than what the incumbent brands can. And I just felt, I was so passionate about, you know, this idea. And I felt like I really had the perfect combination of skills and experiences to be the one to execute on this idea. And so while, you know, licensing is definitely a path I could have chosen, I ultimately chose the much more challenging route, which is to build my own company from the ground up.
Yeah. I mean, I think the licensing is not necessarily that easy either, because the margins are so low. You know, you're making single digit percentages on things, so it incentivizes you to go as wide as possible. Like, that's why Martha Stewart's got a million different products with her name on it, whereas you're trying to go deep on one category. But that means, you know, you need the motivation and the will to keep going on this path for a long time. Like, this is a commitment.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing this for, you know, you've already been doing it for 2 years before you launched.
Yeah. About a year and a half. And I think making that commitment was really, really easy. So I had this idea in 2016. And then 2016 was a really big year for my old business. I was super busy. And so 2017 rolls around and I started thinking about, you know, what I'm doing with my life and what kind of impact I'm going to make that year. And I came back to this idea. And so initially, you know, sort of New Year's resolution was to just explore this further and start having conversations and see what could materialize. And after about a month of diving really deep into the market research, talking to a few folks in the paint industry, and then talking to people about, you know, what it might take to raise capital, you know, just based on all of the feedback and validation that I got in that early process, I decided it was probably like February of last year to stop operating my other business that was really successful. So I went all in and took a big risk because I had a business that was going really well, but I felt like this had the potential to be so much greater and to touch so many more people than I could just running an interior design firm. So I definitely went all in. Lived off of savings pretty much all of 2017. And, you know, so I've been fully committed on this for, you know, for a while now. And, you know, I'm in it for the long haul.
I'm fascinated by the fact that you said that making that commitment was easy. I can understand, like, choosing to go at it on your own may have been easy. But when you're thinking about all the categories, there's how many, 30, 40 aisles at Home Depot, and you picked one of them, right? There could have been a lot of different ideas that you could have gravitated towards. Why paint and why not something else?
So I felt like, you know, I definitely wanted to do something in the home space. And I felt like all the other categories that one would think of for an interior designer to tackle, number one, were really obvious. But number two, I felt like we're oversaturated. You know, there's no shortage of places to buy furniture. Mm. I felt like there was no shortage of places to buy bedding. Could there be a different brand with a different point of view, you know, and an interesting spin on product? Yeah, but I didn't want to do just another, you know, fill in the blank. I truly wanted to create a disruptive company. And paint is a massive, massive market. But also, I felt like it was a really overlooked category in the home space. You know, it is an aesthetic product that helps make your home beautiful, but it's treated like, you know, hardware, you know, in terms of how it's marketed. And I just saw so much opportunity around this category. And even though paint sounds unsexy, in the world of interior design, color is so important. And color can be really transformative. You know, you can take a space that is a blank white box, paint it a beautiful color, and absolutely transform the way it looks. And more importantly, transform the way someone feels when they walk into that space. So color has so much power. And so I just was super passionate about paint. And I, you know, it's funny when I would tell people about the idea that I had and what I was building, people would be like, why paint? Even my mom was like, you're going to start a paint company. Like, what? You know, but, yeah. You know, to me, it made so much sense. And it was all I could think about.
Has your mom come around to it now?
Yeah, she's proud.
That's good.
Yeah.
I can see how, from an aesthetic point of view as a designer, the colors of paint is just such an awesome canvas to play with. What about making the paint? What did you learn about actually manufacturing paint that came as a surprise or that you didn't expect to get into?
Well, I don't know if there's anything that really came as a surprise, but paint is a chemical product. There's a lot of chemistry involved in paint formulation. So I definitely learned probably more about chemistry than I did in all of my years of high school and college. So that was a fun learning process that I probably didn't necessarily expect, you know.
My first company was, we manufactured fabric dye. So
oh, interesting.
It has some similarities. Yeah. It was liquids. And I think something that I learned, which I didn't expect to get involved in all of that either. I have always been really interested in physical products, industrial design, and also software. And so to end up doing this like fabric dye business for 5 years was kind of weird. But something that I learned doing that I think applies to paint and cosmetics that it might be underappreciated is the fact that liquids and, you know, pastes are very scalable in terms of manufacturing because you can make a small amount relatively easily. And as you scale up, it doesn't require a lot of manual labor to increase the volumes over time. So that makes it a really scalable product, almost as scalable as software, but not quite, compared to something that might require a lot of hand labor or a lot of automation or something like that.
Yeah, well, I think what's interesting about paint is that smaller quantities do involve a much more manual process because the larger equipment that's meant to sort of mix and manufacture paint is automated and it's designed to produce large batches and thousands of gallons at a time. So if you wanted to, say, manufacture just like a few hundred gallons, it's a lot more labor intensive and a lot more costly. But so there's definitely economies of scale, though, as the volume increases. And, the more sophisticated paint factories have a lot of automation. And so long as you're not producing really small quantities, like, you know, under a few hundred gallons, like, you know, anything larger than that, is pretty much automated and really, really easy to scale up.
In my case, we were literally manufacturing it ourselves. And like initially it started with, 5 gallon pails. And then we went up to 50 gallon barrels and kind of scaled up from there. And we had Gloria Noto on the podcast a few months ago, who is doing this amazing cosmetics line. And she was literally hand making and hand filling an order of 40,000 bottles.
Oh, wow.
And that's the kind of thing that I'm thinking about when I think about the fact that it is possible with like a relatively low number of humans to produce large quantities of liquids. So yes, the processes change over time, but
yeah,
it's an interesting area that I think most of us who, you know, just grew up in the world kind of taking all of these things for granted don't think about when you consider like the different types of businesses that you could get into.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, one interesting thing about paint, though, is a lot of the raw materials that you use to make paint actually start out in powder form. So, you know, some of the pigments and some of the other ingredients are actually powders then that get mixed in with water and resin and lots of other materials to make the paint. And so some of those raw materials that go in paint in their raw state really can't be handled, which is why, you know, they're mixed and handled using machinery. It's definitely an interesting process. And it's really interesting to hear what your process was like, you know, manufacturing the fabric dyes.
When I look at the materials that you've put out there, one obvious challenge that comes with selling colors on the internet is that, you know, what you see on your screen is probably not exactly what you're going to experience in real life. And you're doing part of that solution comes through the swatches that you send, but it's also through the photography and the graphic design and trying to communicate the feeling of a color. And I'm just curious how you went about that. You know, obviously you've got this experience across blogging and TV, but when it came to the photography and the graphic design, was that something you were able to art direct yourself? Like, who did you find to help you do that?
Yeah. So we were super scrappy. You know, you talked at the top of the show about how we invested in, like, you know, all this technology and we built our algorithm and had a really polished product, but we went scrappy in a lot of areas. So I actually art directed all of our photography. And my team produced all of our photography. So in,
wow, that's cool.
So instead of like hiring it out to an agency and spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, we did a lot of it ourselves, or really all of it ourselves, like even down to me doing a lot of the like shopping for some of the accessories and things that ended up in the photo shoots. But it was super important to be able to show customers what the color could look like in context. And so every single one of our colors has a beautiful interior vignette that gives you a sense of what the color could look like in a real space. And of course, our swatches allow people the opportunity to really see it in person in their own home. But it was important to have that photography to really pair with each of our color offerings. And like you said, to communicate a feeling, you know, if you go to any other paint company's website and you click into the color, all you'll see is a little pixelated, you know, hex code square of a color that doesn't really tell you what it's going to look like and doesn't even describe the color. So we made it a point to make sure that all of our colors were accompanied with, you know, robust descriptions that help you understand what that color will look like. So we talk about, you know, the undertones. We describe if it's warm or cool. And we also describe, you know, how that color is going to make your space feel. And I think those are all the things, you know, the copy combined with the photography really helps bring it all to life on our website.
When you're thinking about those vignettes and the photography, what are the rules of the Claire universe in terms of what it should look like, the type of furniture that should be there? Did you define that with your team somehow?
Yeah, we tried to. I mean, we pulled it together really scrappily and really quickly. So I think if we were to do it all again, we learned a lot and have a lot of lessons of what we'll do differently next time. But in general, it was really important to keep all the photography really clean and uncolored. We wanted the color to be the hero in all of the pictures. We wanted to keep the furniture really clean lined and understated. And so those were really the core attributes that were important to inject into all of our photography. It was just this clean aesthetic.
What do you wish you would have done differently?
You know, I think part of it was just due to like limited resources and being scrappy, but you know, I would have loved to have more larger rooms. You know, we focused on vignettes just because they're a lot easier to pull together than a fully styled room. But we know that the more you can show a customer in terms of what that color might look like, the easier you can give them a sense of that color. And so, you know, definitely, you know, having probably a larger variety of full rooms is something that we would do a little bit differently. Having a larger variety of spaces, like we didn't shoot any bedrooms, and you know, bedrooms are a big, you know, obviously a space that people want to paint. So, you know, just things like that. But I think, you know, where we ended up, we're really, really happy with. But just, you know, lots of little things that we know that we'll approach a little bit differently the next time we shoot our photography.
And when you put together that creative team, were they people that you knew from before, or how did you go about putting together all those people?
Yeah, so all the photographers we worked with are people that I'd worked with in the past. I hired a couple of stylists to help us on set and, you know, pull together the accessories and things. And most of them were people that I'd worked with in the past. You know, and it was really great. The guy who shot all of our homepage photography was the photographer who shot me in my first editorial feature. I was featured in HGTV magazine back in 2010, and he was the photographer that shot that. And, you know, after that, he ended up shooting me for Better Homes and Gardens when my apartment was featured in there. And then he shot a lot of my design projects for my portfolio. And he was the first person I thought of when it came time to shoot photography for Claire. So it was really fun to bring all of these people into the Claire fold who had been a part of my journey over all of these years. And, you know, it really made it so much more special.
Cool. Well, as we wrap up, I'd love to hear about, I'm like browsing the paint swatches as you're describing. I'm like, what color should I paint my room right now? I'm like, they're so beautiful. It makes me think of, I don't know if you'll get this reference, but there's a scene, I think it's in Ocean's 12, where Julia Roberts is like repainting her house red, or the one of the rooms, and she's talking to the painter and saying like, no, make it a little more oxblood, or make it a little more something else. I forget what she says. You've got, looks like, four shades of reddish pink. Is that something you're trying to like expand on, or are you trying to keep that narrow? What are the things that you're, it could be color, it could be something else. What are the things that you're excited about for the next couple of years of product development?
Yeah, I think color, new product categories. You know, one of the questions that I get asked the most is, will you launch new colors? You know, we launched with 55 colors. So,
that's a lot.
Well, not a lot compared to...
It's a lot, but not a lot.
Yeah, a typical brand has an average of 3,000 colors.
Yeah.
So it's really, really not a lot. But, you know, stay tuned. We might be introducing some fun new colors. And, you know, we're just excited about continuing to grow the brand, getting in front of more people, improving our product more and more, both our physical product and our digital product. So, you know, we've got a really... you know, aggressive pipeline. There's a lot of projects in the works, and we're just excited to continue growing as a business.
Well, if people want to find out more, they can go to claire.com. It's C-L-A-R-E.
Yep.
And anything else you want to point people to?
Yeah, you can follow us on social media at Claire Paint, C-L-A-R-E Paint. Follow us on Instagram and check out our website.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.